all we ever have really is right now. When you're in that transition, you are not present. You're thinking about the future, or you're thinking about the past. Thinking about the future, people asking you, what you gonna do next? You don't have the answer. What does that bring on? Anxiety, stress, worry. The past ain't happening now. Future ain't here yet. Focus on being present. Athletes do it all the time. Every play, you're in the moment, right? Like, think about when you was on the field. You can't even hear the fans. Like, you're so locked in the moment. That's called being present. And so that would be my message to athletes. Situations can change. We don't have to always resign in our situations, but we do have to acknowledge them, accept them, and then take one step at a time to change them.
What's happening, beautiful people? Welcome back to the Thrive Elder Sports Podcast. Excited for you guys to hear this episode with Ryan Mundy. Ryan is an 8-year NFL? Did I just say, what is the NFL? He's an 8-year NFL veteran who is the founder of Alchemy Health. He is revolutionizing the way underserved communities have access to mental health resources. And also, as an extension of Alchemy Health, he branched off and started the Alchemy Athlete Coalition. You'll hear about why he started that. Obviously, his background as an NFL player and wanting to help athletes through the transition and athletes with their mental health ties into that. I actually first heard about Ryan on the Pivot podcast. For those of you guys who aren't familiar with the Pivot, just look up Ryan Mundy, the Pivot podcast on YouTube. It was a great episode. And I want to use this as a teachable moment just to encourage you guys to reach out to people. You know what I mean? Sometimes we look at people and say, oh, they've been on this platform or they have this many followers. They never get back to me. But I always try to remind myself, and I want to remind you, that you have nothing to lose. You know, the worst that happens is you reach out to someone for an opportunity or to ask them to be on your show or just to connect with them or whatever your reason is for reaching out. The worst that happens is they just don't respond or they tell you no. Big deal, right? Doesn't really affect your life at all. But if they do respond, then you end up with great situations like me, where I'm thinking, hey, Ryan's probably not going to respond to me. He's a busy guy building his platform. He's been on the Pivot podcast, which is one of the biggest current or former athlete podcasts out there. There's no way he's going to want to be on my show. But lo and behold, we recorded an episode together because I reached out. So I hope that inspires you to just shoot your shot, go for it, and everything in life. Before we get into this episode, as always, if this is your first time here, thank you for tuning in. If you've listened before, please subscribe, leave a 5-star review if you're listening on Apple or Spotify. If you're listening on YouTube, I'm really trying to make an effort to grow my YouTube channel this year. So please subscribe, hit that like button. Let's get into this episode with Ryan Mundy. The people who listen to the show, it's, you know, obviously a lot of former athletes, but current athletes as well. So that's why I like to have people like yourself on, not just former athletes doing great things, but people who have been through the transition and can kind of speak to how to navigate those waters, you know? Mm-hmm. With that being said, man, I think a good place for us to start, you know, I heard you mention in another interview that you retired at the age of 31, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I'm 31 now. I'll be 32 in a couple of weeks. And God, when I think about, thank you, brother. Like, and the reason I bring that up is because, you know, I say retired, but really I just wasn't good enough to make it to the league. So I retired or finished playing football at the age of, you know, 22. Yeah. And so when I think about myself as a 31-year-old man, for you to have walked away from the game at that point, like my transition was tough at 22. We're talking about almost a decade later when you walked away. Mm-hmm. Can you just talk a little bit about what you were experiencing? What was going through your mind at that time when you took off the pads for the last time?
Yeah, I think just to quickly level set, you know, whether you're 22, 18, 31, 40, something like Tom Brady, whatever it is, we all have a common denominator, and it's the day after we're done. We all have that like fate in sight. And so, you know, whether you play high school, make it to college at any given level, stint in the league, whatever it is, like that is a common denominator. We all have to ask ourselves, like, who am I when I'm not tackling somebody, when I'm not catching a pass, when I'm not running the rock? What does that look like? And for me, I had always kind of fancied myself as, you know, a guy who had a good head on his shoulders, even back in, you know, I did my undergrad at Michigan. Even at Michigan, like I was taking economic classes, marketing classes, just like trying to identify and find myself outside of football. I knew there was something there, but I didn't know how to manifest it. The same setup happened throughout my time in the NFL. was taking advantage of some like professional programming offered by the league and also the NFLPA. Shoot, I even got my MBA when I was an active NFL athlete. So when I retire, I was educated for sure. I had an MBA and, you know, executive program experience, the whole nine. But what it really showed up was I wasn't emotionally and mentally ready for that. That's where the lack of skill development, conditioning really showed itself. So I was in this really interesting spot where it's like, man, I'm smart. I'm financially stable. I want to get out into the world, leverage the platform that is NFL to do other things. And I was capable of doing that on the external, right? Checked a lot of boxes, smart, lead, you know, all these other things, educated. But it was hard for me to manifest them and actually execute against them because I wasn't right on the inside. And that emotional experience and mental experience was really, really challenging. And I think that's what a lot of athletes kind of experience is like we're physically conditioned, but we're not mentally and emotionally conditioned to really know who we are. Think about it. If you ask, you know, athletes, complete football players, like, what do you like to do when you're not playing football? Everybody's like, you know, video games, whatever it is, right? Like, but that's right. Not you. You know what I'm saying? And that's not who you are. And that's not your being or your essence. And a lot of times it's a scary journey to take that, to understand that, but it's necessary to really like be the best and highest version of yourself. And so when I retire, like I had a lot of work to do. I thought I was doing a lot of work, you know, again, solid career, MBA, family, all these other things, but there was such a huge, not gap, but just like I needed to do a lot of work on myself to really make sure that I was ready for this next chapter of life. And that work doesn't stop, right? Like it just keeps going. There is no end point or stop point on working on yourself. That was the biggest realization that I needed to come upon, but it was hard, man. Like when I retired, not only was I dealing with anxiety, depression, identity issues, I was physically hurt, quite literally physically hurt. My career ended on an injury. I had back surgery in 2015, coming off my best season as a pro in 2014. Well, quite frankly, I had like pro ball stats. I had 100 plus tackles, 4 picks, touchdown. I was balling. And then to go from that to a new regime coming in, telling me I'm not good enough. And then on top of that, I get hurt. I was not in a good spot. And so I just walked away from the game at my peak, if you will, or coming off of my best season previously. So I was very emotionally hurt and was dealing with the anxiety, the depression, and the identity issues and just trying to figure myself out. And that's why I say like that part of me wasn't fully developed and I didn't know what I was looking for. And in that circumstance, I quite literally couldn't buy myself. I couldn't buy help, right? Like was just trying, really, really struggling mightily. And so like, you know, I think that's what we all face as athletes is that like, who are you when you're not, when you don't have a ball in your hand, when you're not on the court, when you're not on the field? And that's a really big question that we all have to answer at any given point in time in which we are stepping away from our sport.
I love how you touched on the fact that the work doesn't stop, meaning that process of self-discovery, of figuring out where you want to go, who you are, who you want to become, all of that, you know. And I think to your point, a lot of us struggle just getting the ball rolling or even knowing that we need to ask ourselves the question of who we want to become. So what was that going through all that turmoil coming off of the, you know, the peak arguably of your career, the injury? How did you even begin the process of figuring out what you wanted to do next? And more importantly, who you wanted to become?
Yeah, it starts with the phrase that is, you know, thrown out there pretty frequently now, go see a therapist. Really, really simple concept. But what I learned, and this is in 2015, 2016. So it's long before this conversation is mainstream. And it's like, not okay, but like people are more vulnerable talking about their experiences. I was dealing with this stuff 6-7 years ago. And that was my first step. I knew I needed help outside of myself, but I didn't even know what I was looking for. So that's what I meant when I couldn't buy my way to help. Like if I knew what I was looking for, maybe that was you're right, starting point, but I didn't even know how to start the process. So I just went to Google, you know, try to search some therapists in the area, but that was a bad experience. And I went through quite a few different people before I found somebody who was right for me. And it was during that experience where I learned, like, you know, financial resources are important, but they're not the end all be all. You know, money does not buy you peace. Money does not provide you joy. Money can give you temporary happiness, but it's not fulfilling on a long-standing or an enduring basis, because you're always going to be chasing the next thing. And so that's what I was in search of, was like, where's my peace? Where's my joy? Regardless of what's going on around me, how do I like unlock that within myself? And ultimately, you know, just like not stabilize, but just, you know, get settled into this new version of Ryan Mundy.
When you say you were having bad experiences with those therapists that you were initially seeking out, I'm assuming it's because none of them had played 10 years in the NFL and could really relate to your experience. But were there other things that you found yourself struggling with, I guess, in those conversations you were having with those initial therapy sessions?
Yeah, they weren't black. Just like being straight up, like, you know, they didn't understand where I was coming from, right? There's two big identities that I come to the table with: black man, professional athlete, right? Neither one of them necessarily have like a sparkling reputation or stereotype associated with them, right? Like, black men continue to be persecuted in the media, police violence, so on and so forth. Athletes, particularly retired athletes, everybody's like, oh man, hope you don't go broke. What are you going to do with the rest of your life, right? Are you going to go coach football? Are you going to go on TV and talk about football? No and no, right? Like, there's no, like, real engagement. And even furthermore, like, it's so hard to not separate yourself from that, but say, like, look, I'm more than a football player. Like, but everybody just wants, they just see you as that. I went to a funeral in May, saw some family that I never met before. They're like, oh, you're the football player. I'm like, I ain't played football in like 7-8 years, but people still, they still like associate that with you. You know what I mean? So like navigating that dynamic has always been interesting, but showing up in that therapist's office, the starting point was they just couldn't relate to me as a black man. You know, like being vulnerable with somebody who doesn't necessarily understand your experiences or connect with your experiences or can help provide a lens through their lived experience or your experience matter to me in that setting. And I wasn't getting that.
Mm-hmm. Man, you know, there was a period in my life when, like I said, I finished playing football at 22. And there was a period where someone actually told me and set me up with an appointment for a therapist. And I drove 45 minutes to the office, sat in the parking lot, and then drove back home. I couldn't even bring myself to go inside because of what you're saying, just being afraid to be vulnerable or being afraid that the person wouldn't understand my experience before I even walked in there. I think there was this sense of shame and embarrassment that came along with it too. Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you feel that, did you experience that, or, you know, in the experience of people that you're working with or that you've seen who come out of the league or play any sport, do you think there's a sense of shame or embarrassment around having those negative feelings or not being able to be that, you know, archetype of the superhero athlete on this, you know, under the spotlight?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard because that's what people expect of you, right? Like, when you show up in settings, you show up as the one who made it, or like, you know, everything is supposed to be good because you got what? You got money, you got some degree of fame, celebrity, whatever it is. Like, people just automatically assume that because that is a portion of your life, that should be the totality of your life. That's not the case. And so there's a disconnect that ultimately arises within, a conflict that arises within, when you're not even feeling like that's who you are anymore, or you're not feeling connected to that space anymore, but yet still you're sitting across from somebody who's talking to you about it or expecting that of you. And so you feel like you have to put on a face, or you got to put on a front, or you still got to show up like that. But deep down inside, you know that ain't you, or you know that you're not necessarily there anymore, or you're struggling to try to reconcile with that version of yourself. Like, all those things make it really, really difficult for athletes to transition.
Yeah, man, I remember even going to holiday parties and people asking me, so what are you going to do now? And I'm like, man, yeah. I really don't know, honestly.
Don't know. I don't know. Yes.
But to your point, we try to scramble and just give some kind of answer that sounds good out of just pride or, you know, not wanting to say, I have no idea. But back to the story about the therapist, man, like eventually, were you able to find someone, even if it wasn't some of the therapists that you were seeking out, were you eventually able to find someone that you could connect with or who you felt like you could talk to or open up with to get those things off of your chest?
Yeah, eventually I found that person, but it took me a long time to get there. And even furthermore, that person was ultimately myself.
Mm.
You know, a lot of times we try to find help outside of ourselves, which is meaningful and important. But I'm a firm believer of like everything that we could possibly need lies within. And that journey inward is really, really scary. It's like we try to run from ourselves and sometimes or in some circumstances, or even just like looking in the mirror and just like really understanding yourself, being comfortable with yourself. I'm speaking from my own personal experience, but I do think that shows up in society as a whole. But that journey inward was really, really important. And that's where like the magic happened. Like, yeah, I needed to kind of have an outlet, talk to this person, talk to that person, but ultimately it wasn't going to work unless I worked it. And I had to work on me on the inside. And that's where like things really started to shift.
Man, that's great. I love that you touched on that. Like getting help from the outside in is great, but it's even better if you can do it from the inside out.
Yeah. People can't do it for you. Yeah. They can't do it for you. And in some settings, like the responsibility always lies on you to communicate effectively with the person sitting across from the table. But like, you know yourself, you know all your, you know everything about yourself. There's nothing that you don't know about yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. And you, we have at times can try to avoid ourselves or avoid the things that we don't like about ourselves or kind of sweep them under the rug and not address them. They ain't going nowhere and you can't hide from yourself. So the faster that I was able, not even faster, but at the right time when I was able to start like sitting with myself and being comfortable with who I am and how I was showing up, that's really when the magic started to happen.
Mm. So once you reach this point of beginning to understand who you are and doing the healing of yourself, then of course, most people's question is, what do I do? You know, understanding who you are, who you want to become. How did you begin figuring out the process of how you wanted to, you know, what you wanted to create in the next chapter of your life post football?
It was a journey, and I was just ready for whatever happened on that journey. I didn't go into it with too many expectations. I just went into it with like a framework, a very loose framework of like, look, you know, these are the things that I'm generally interested in. This is what, you know, I think is an opportunity for me to do good and do well. All those things really were a part of the discovery process, I would say, but I didn't come into it with these hard and fast documented bullet points of I need to do this. I don't subscribe to that. And I think that a big part of my ability to like transition and thrive after sports is just has been my ability to be open to whatever shows itself up to me, because the right thing will happen at the right time. And so my job is just to kind of make sure I see it, I feel it, and I'm ready for it.
Okay. So this is for those of you listening, don't miss this gem that Ryan just dropped. That's one of the best gems ever dropped on the podcast right there. A lot of people, to your point, will try to say, hey, when you want to make a transition, when you want to figure out what you want to do, just do this, this, and this. Follow this, you know, 5-step, 7-step blueprint. And this is the formula, as if it's a universal thing, versus what you just said, Ryan, is you doing the healing, tapping into yourself and focusing on that part of it. You almost allowed yourself to be naturally guided towards the things that you're ultimately meant to be doing. And by figuring out who you are, who you want to become, you were naturally led there. I think that's a really important point that I don't want people to miss.
Yeah, it's super important. You know, you got to have some like disposition about yourself to have some guardrails, but you can't be so guarded where you don't let things come in or where you don't let things show up. And I've always been really good about understanding the moment and, you know, having the agility and the flexibility to be active in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Now, man, we could spend the whole podcast talking about the being and becoming part of it, which I know I want to find some time to have you back on so we could do that. But I'm itching to know more and get under the hood of the origin story of alchemy and how that all came about. And I know there's a big gap between trying to find therapists, trying to discover yourself, doing that, you know, inward journey, so to speak, and the formation of alchemy. But can you just walk us through a couple of the stops on the road that led you to this point?
Yeah, I got into venture capital investing as an angel investor. So like everything that I talked about during that transition time was the personal side of things. There was two paths, the personal and the professional. So while I was still like going through my own issues, my family was going through chronic conditions, diabetes, heart attack, my grandfather passed away from Alzheimer's, grandmother had a stroke. I mean, there was just a lot of things happening on the personal health front. Professionally, like I was getting after it. If you saw me out in the world, you'd be like, damn, there goes Ryan again. You know, he's a go-getter. He's at the conferences. He's on panels. He's, you know, this tech guy now. And I was doing a bunch of that. So I built up like a brand and network and an experience around like entrepreneurship and primarily starting out on the venture capital investing side as an angel investor. I did that for probably about 2.5 years, up until 2018, almost 3 years. During that time, like I was in any and everything. I was messing around with like crypto. This is like pre this last wave. I was doing crypto back in like 2018, all that type of stuff. So it was kind of a wild time. But eventually I got to a point where I was like, all right, like I have a lot of irons in the fire. I need to start corralling this activity and like driving value specifically somewhere into something that I am in control of. When you're investing, you're saying, here's a check, good luck, right? But I was starting to feel the drive of like, I want to bring something into the world and I want to like build that, right? Use my hands, my skills to do something. And so in 2018, actually right where I'm sitting right now or somewhere in this area, me and a business partner, we started a company around eco-friendly products. And the core eco-friendly product was a reusable straw that came in an eco-friendly case that you could carry around in your pocket, your book bag, whatever. Why is that important? Because in 2018, everybody was on paper straws and everybody was on the eco-friendly tip, and paper straws back then were quite frankly terrible. You couldn't drink anything, right? And restaurants were handing them out and people would be like, oh, paper straw. And you're like, oh, well, why don't we just give you the stainless steel straw and you'll be fine. And so we actually built a business around that, saw the opportunity. It was like, you know, there's a little something here. Let's figure it out. And I went into it with the expectation of like, will this change my life or will this like, you know, be this massive, huge company? Probably not. But it was more so an exercise and an opportunity for me to kind of like figure out entrepreneurship 101. And so we started that company in 2018. The name of that company was Swizzle. We did fairly well for what we put into it, for sure. You know, we had national distribution in Target, several other retailers. It was pretty cool. But ultimately, that wasn't like my life's calling. And the thing about entrepreneurship, like when you start a business, like you got to be 10 toes down, 10 hands, like 10 fingers, baby hairs. I mean, everything, every part of your being needs to be committed to that business to make it come to life. And I just didn't have that that gusto for the company. Do I care about the environment? Absolutely. Do I care about that business? Absolutely. But it wasn't like my thing, right, that I could like go all in. Like completely, I didn't have that same fire that I had toward it, that I had playing football. And that's ultimately what I was looking for. And so we did well with that business. We sold that business in October of 2020. Yes, I sold a straw company which, you know, like if you do a good job with anything, somebody else may think it's interesting and they'll want to acquire it from you. And so, yeah, all that experience on a business level got me to starting Alchemy. So it was a unique combination of like personal experience, dealing with what I was dealing with, professional experience, had the chops. And again, reflecting on my time in the investment space, I didn't see anybody investing into Black health, Black wellness. And I was living in a living, breathing example of like, look, we need help and support here, but nobody is doing it. So that, you know, that was, that is a little bit of the genesis of what got me going with Alchemy.
Mm. And then how does, because I know you just recently announced the Alchemy Athlete Coalition. So obviously with your athletic background, it's kind of a natural fit, but was that something you planned going into it early? Because Black mental health, you're obviously casting a wide net with that, but you're getting more specific with the Alchemy Athlete Coalition to make sure there's an emphasis on helping athletes. So can you just talk a little bit more about that side of the business?
Like how I thought about Alchemy out the gate, and it'll bleed into Alchemy, the Athlete Coalition. I was like, look, like there's nobody doing anything as it relates to Black health, Black health and wellness, Black mental health. There's a huge like market opportunity here to do good and do well. So I got going, we got started, raised a little bit of money through some venture investing, and still like building that community up. And what I learned throughout the 2 years in running Alchemy, and our mission at Alchemy is to create generational health. And we have a vision around a world in which Black health disparities are non-existent. And that is something that 9.5 times out of 10 people get behind, they rally around and they're like, look, sign me up, let's go. It's time, generational health, right? But what needed to happen was people needed to better understand what that means to them on an individual level. How do I get started? How do I support? There's a lot of different ways in which people show up as Black. And so we had to start to create entry points for folks. And the great thing about what we were doing is we make content. And so content can be directed and developed to this audience, that audience, whoever needs to see it. And so under the banner of like Black health and generational health, we started creating these sub-communities. And the Athlete Coalition was actually our second sub-community. We started out with HBCU students. And so we're in the mode of like building out sub-communities to have stronger entry points for folks who are interested in culturally aware, intelligent health and wellness support. And so bringing it full circle, because I'm an athlete and I dedicated my life to it, it was a very natural extension for me to say like, hey, we should do something for athletes. Why? Because I played in the NFL for 8 years. Why? Because I was dealing with depression, anxiety, and identity issues. Why? Because of that experience, that's a big part of why I started the company. I couldn't get help. I couldn't buy help. I said that earlier, right? So like all these things were coming full circle. So it was when Alchemy Athlete and the coalition came up, it felt very natural. And again, it was aligning with how people were looking at the brand. And so we launched it a few months ago and just been running ever since.
Mm. I love that concept of finding entry points through the sub communities underneath, you know, the umbrella of Black mental health. Are there any sub communities coming up that you plan on, you know, dedicating time, energy, resources into as those entry points that you could talk about, you know, anything that's not top secret yet?
No, nothing's top secret. Like I'm an open book, right? Mm-hmm. And like, even when partnership conversations and just like work that we do with other companies, whatever it is, like, I just tell them straight up, like, I don't sign NDAs. Like, you know, like, I don't have the time or bandwidth. I got a lot of things going on here. You probably got a lot of things going on here. I'm in it to build, not take away. And that's just a quick, I'm diverging from the point, but it's just, I'm just really, really focused on building out the Athlete Coalition, building out our work with students. We have some major partnerships that we'll be announcing over the next several weeks. That include like the National Alliance of Mental Illness, largest mental health nonprofit, We're represented by CAA, Creative Artists Agency. And so there's a huge market opportunity for us to do that. But all that builds up to is that you'll be seeing a lot of Alchemy outside in the community, virtually, digital, all that, and more in 2023.
That's awesome, man. I want to come back to something that you shared earlier when you talked about raising funds. And I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, so I'm not going to say when, but I was at an event once upon a time, and there was an entire panel dedicated to raising funds as a person of color. And you think that that might be something that was educational or inspirational at the very least. But what I found on that panel was there are a lot of people talking about how hard it is and all the challenges and different things like that. And for me, I was thinking to myself, like, damn, this panel is not very motivating. If anything, I think people might leave discouraged as a Black founder or a person of color trying to raise funding. And you strike me as a type of man who, you know, you don't make excuses. Like, obviously, you're getting the job done. So, and I know you've probably seen a lot of people who speak that way when it comes to raising funds as a Black founder and talking about the challenges versus the opportunity. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I'm very careful on how I participate in that conversation. I do realize that there is, I guess, using common vernacular, some privilege associated with how I show up. And I validate all founders as it relates to raising money. 1000%. It is not easy. I was late on this call because I'm, you know, trying to pitch investors, so on and so forth. And everybody, I think what it is, people just have to find their angle, right? But even more so, before we get to like the systemic structure of venture capital and investing, there's such a huge knowledge gap on how to play the game. That's where probably the focus, I think, should really lie. Like, how do you play the game better? Do you even know the game, right? And if we knew better, then hopefully we could navigate some of these people in conversations and situations better. I think that's really where it starts. It's like, look, how do we understand what venture capital is and how does it function and what are the expectations there? What are you signing up for and how does it work? I mean, all like convertible notes, safes, price round, board of directors. I mean, there's just so much that needs to happen from a knowledge base. I think probably I would want to use, and I used a lot of my energy making sure that I knew what I was talking about and how I showed up, so that when I showed up, I could probably navigate the conversations better. So like my advice is always a lot just like, look, how can we like come together and like teach one another? How can we understand like what venture really means and like how can we play the game better when we're in those conversations? And hopefully that helps reduce some of the jarring statistics that we see, because those are extremely real. But I'm always just one who's thinking about, well, I tell my team this, like, how can we start with self to identify our opportunities to make sure that when we're in those environments and settings, we're giving ourselves the best shot. And I'm not saying that a lot of founders don't do that, but I am saying that I think there is a strong opportunity for us to acknowledge that as a collective, as a part, as a big part of the equation, in parallel with like some of the things that show up from a systemic standpoint in venture capital.
And I appreciate you going into that, because that's the reason really that I wanted to ask you that is, to your point, you've been able to keep your focus on filling those gaps where you feel like the knowledge may be missing, and versus focusing on the systems that may be there that could potentially hold you back. Like, and I asked you that question because I knew you'd be able to share something from a mindset perspective of where you're putting your energy, where your focus is, and being able to continue to build and grow in spite of things that may be out there trying to hold you back, which I think applies in life, not just raising capital. You know what I mean?
So yeah, for sure. I mean, it showed up in my mental health experience. Like, look, how can I even navigate this if I don't even know what I'm looking for? Mm-hmm. You know, if I don't have like you know, a base level understanding of what it is, on how I'm feeling or what I need, then more times than not, I'll be off of the mark.
Right. Yeah, I want to go back for a second. I've been meaning to ask you this because I was watching an interview that you did last night. I think it was, DaQuell Jackson.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that I really appreciated that you pointed out was you said in the early stages, and I don't know if this applies to alchemy, I'm sure it does, but when you were really just trying to get your feet wet, you know, put yourself in position to win, find different opportunities, you would reach out to people and leverage your NFL experience. And you would say, I think you said in the subject line, you would put Ryan Mundy, Chicago Bears. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that's important is because a lot of the athletes that I come across there, you know, which is easy to do, when I used to do the same thing where you say, all I have is, you know, football experience. All I have is, you know, experience in my sport. And so I always tell people to lean into that and use that to your advantage. And when you said that on the podcast, I was listening to it, DaQuell, I was like, I'm definitely going to ask Ryan about this. So can you talk about leaning into your experience, even for non-athletes, but like you said, using what you got, you know what I mean? Finding your angle. How did you even know to do that? Was that like a subconscious thing or did you learn that from somewhere? Like, I'm going to put Ryan Mundy, Chicago Bears in the subject line so I can increase my response rate when I'm reaching out to people.
Yeah, it was, just, you know, looking, understanding self and understanding what people are interested in. Like, okay, I need to know who I am, what I'm comfortable, how I'm comfortable showing up. And does that marry up with like what people see me as or expect of me? And that was always something that I had to kind of navigate because I had mentioned earlier, like I was physically hurt and emotionally hurt. So quite frankly, I didn't even want to have a damn thing to do with football. Like you asking me about the Bears in particular, I was like, man, don't talk to me about them. But I had to do it because that was what? That was the bridge to get into the conversation. And so it was kind of like, you know, doing what you got to do to kind of get where you want to go. But yeah, it was quite the journey. But I just knew that like, look, people would respond to that. People would open doors up for that. And that's what I was saying earlier around just like the self-education aspect of it. Like I had to make sure that I was prepared to have those conversations because I knew I would get the meeting. But when I sat across from an individual, like I didn't want to sit there and talk about the Super Bowl for an hour. That would be a waste of my time. You may find value in that. You may, you know, be cool and go back and tell your friends or whatever it is, but that is invaluable to me. Right. Like I needed to come to the table with like, all right, like we talked about football for maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. But now, you know, let's talk about like what you're seeing in the market, like how you thinking about, how would you think about this deal, that deal, whatever it is. But I really had to learn the art of like conversation and how to pivot those conversations so that it was mutually beneficial, right? Or at least I was getting what I needed out of that conversation. And so that's something that I communicate to a lot of athletes is like, you could get in the door, you could get in the room. It's like, what do you do when you get there, right? And again, talking about that earlier talking point, like people already have their stereotypes of you, right? So they already think that, you know, you may not be as smart, you know, you just like, you got money, you don't know what to do with it, all these things. And that's what the narrative is out in the marketplace. So they're just believing what they see in the marketplace. But you have an opportunity to show up differently. And I always took each interaction that I had with somebody in a business setting or context as an opportunity to like dispel the myth. No, I'm not ESPN 30 for 30, bro. Don't look at me like that. You know what I mean? I could go toe to toe with you on any and every business conversation. Yeah, I saw that on CNBC. Let's talk about it. What does that mean? Right? Like all those things were really, really important to me just to make sure that one, I gave people context and how to engage with me because as an athlete, they have no idea how to engage with you. They're just like, oh, we're just going to sit there and talk about football. I don't want to sit there and talk about that all the time. People don't understand like when you're an athlete, that would be the topic of conversation for damn near everybody. Unless you gave them material or you showed them that you're capable of talking about something different. And so it was really, really important for me to do that. And I had to really master the art of conversation there. Mm.
Well, that's a mic drop. I don't even have any follow-up commentary on that. I want to be respectful of your time, man. I just have two more quick questions. And cool. The thing about this question is, you know, throughout the entire course of this conversation, you've answered the question time and time again in many different ways and dropped many gems. But I know by asking you one more time, you'll be able to pull something out and drop some gems that could help some people even more than you already have. So the question I have for you is for those athletes out there who are tuning in, who are struggling, not just former football players, but former athletes from any sport and are in a place where they're like, man, all this sounds great, Ryan. Like, you know, you're giving me some gems, but like, man, I just don't know what to do. I just feel stuck. I have no idea where to even begin. All I know is the game. I don't know. I don't have any other interests. Like, how do I begin to put the pieces together and figure out where I want to go in life?
Yeah. I will provide a very like practical and tactical recommendation here. This book called The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle has fundamentally changed my life. And I just got into this book in like June of this past summer. And I've incorporated it as a life practice. So I listen to it. I listen to the book. I do a lot of audiobooks over reading books. It's more of like a sensual, experiential thing for me. But it has fundamentally changed my life. And I would, and the reason why I bring up that book is when we talk about that transition, trying to figure things out. Thing is, and this is hindsight realization, particularly from the book, is that you have to realize that all we ever have really is right now. That's it. And when you're in that transition, you are not present. You're thinking about the future or you're thinking about the past. And so past tense, damn, I really wish I was still playing. Damn, I miss my teammates. Damn, whatever it is. And because of that, what feelings, thoughts, and emotions come up? Depression, sadness, etc. Thinking about the future, people asking you, what you gonna do next? What are, you know, all these other things you don't have the answer for. What does that bring on? Anxiety, stress, worry, all these other things. The key is the past ain't happening now. The future ain't here yet. Focus on being present. And really taking that journey inward to understand that, like, starting with self, understanding yourself, being present, and not letting, the book talks about, like, time in your mind, your thoughts control you. And there's a particular chapter that talks about, like, you're not your mind, right? So your thoughts are not you. You're separate from your thoughts. It's like, how do you break that down in transition and say, like, yeah, I know I have things to figure out. I'm not saying that you don't. But they can't dominate your psyche and your daily life so much so that you're overwhelmed with anxiety. They can't dominate your life so much so that you're looking back, wishing that you were still doing what you're doing. But you're not doing that anymore. And a lot of times when you retire or you're no longer an athlete, that door is closed. You can't go back. So it's all about this thing of like accepting where you are, but not resigning and saying, this is the permanent stop for me. You just have to always level set and ground yourself in the reality of what is happening right now, being present in the moment. Now, how does that translate to athletes? Athletes do it all the time. Every play, you're in the moment, right? Like, think about when you was on the field. Some of the times, you can't even hear the stand. You can't even hear the fans. Like, you're so locked in the moment. That's called being present. So how do you replicate that feeling each and everything that you do on a daily basis, not thinking about the past, not thinking about the future, but just being where you are right now. And so that would be my message to athletes is like, look, acknowledge where you are, accept where you are, but you have the skills and you have the capabilities. You may have the network to kind of change that situation. Situations can change. We don't have to always resign in our situations, but we do have to acknowledge them, accept them. And then, you know, take one step at a time to change.
Folks, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle. If you haven't read that one, that is my number one book recommendation for all people. There's a version of me before I read that book and a version of me after. Matter of fact, I need to go listen to the audio book because I've only read it. I need to listen to it just to kind of let it sink in from a different angle. So I'm going to get on that ASAP. Ryan, I want to get you out of here, man. I got one final question. Before I do that, I want to give you your flowers. First of all, thank you for coming on the show and just dedicating time to do this. I know you're in the middle of business meetings and you took an hour to spend time with me and the Thrive After Sports family. And I know your words and your message and everything that you do in the world is going to help a lot of people. So thank you for that. Thank you for what you're building, man. I'm excited to continue to watch the journey, watch it unfold. And I know you do it because, you know, you don't do it for the recognition. You do it because you have a heart for service and you actually want to make an impact long after you're, you know, you leave this earth. But just got to tell you, man, you know, I know, you know, a lot of people are watching and inspired by what you're doing. So thank you.
No, I appreciate that, man. Thank you for opening up your platform for me to share my story. And shout out to you too, man. Like, you know, again, we all have to make that transition at some point, right? And there's varying degrees of it, and but the final and common denominator is we have to find that out. And so shout out to you for making that transition as well, man. I know it's not easy, but it is something that together we have a shared connection with, and that bonds us. And those who know. So I appreciate you.
Absolutely, man. Last question, then I promise I'll let you go. I'm going to have all the links and everything to your profiles and everything with Alchemy in the show notes. And I'll do a proper intro for you to make sure that I give people the proper bio of Alchemy and yourself. But how do you want to tell people or leave people with some instructions or just ways to tap in with Alchemy, follow the journey, sign up for the platform? What's the best way for people to do that?
Yeah. So we are Alchemy Health, A-L-K-E-M-E Health, on all social media platforms. Our primary platform is Instagram. So go hit that follow button and go like a few of our posts. We are constantly engaging, talking to our community, et cetera. To actually join our community, you can go to alchemyhealth.com. Again, Alchemy is A-L-K-E-M-E health.com. And the great thing about our platform is, especially now, we moved the entire platform to free. And so we have over 400 pieces of like culturally competent, culturally aware, intelligent, whatever phrase you want to use, Black mental health and wellness content available for you for free. All you got to do is submit an email and a password, and then you got access to video mental health courses. You got access to meditations. You got access to like live group experiences, all that for free. So go check us out. We'd love to have you. We look forward to folks continuing to join us on the journey. And our goal is just to meet you where you are and help you to get to where you want to go. So head on over to alchemyhealth.com and join the family.
There it is. Folks, go check that out right now. Go tap in. Ryan, thank you again, man. You are a prime example of what it looks like to thrive after sports. For everybody listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll see you on the next episode. Peace. Hey, so if you made it to the end of this episode, first of all, thank you for tuning in. For those of you guys who are here for the first time, welcome. Please like the video if you're watching on YouTube and subscribe to this channel. I have a lot more great interviews coming up. I think you'll really be surprised with some of the guests that I have and some of the stories that they have to share. This is important work. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please just leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this episode or any other episodes out with someone who needs to hear it. I am on a mission to help as many athletes transition out of their sport and have successful lives after their careers, and not just survive, but thrive in everything that they do. And you guys know I do that in a myriad of ways. It's not just the podcast, it's not just the books, but I do offer coaching as well. I want to encourage you guys to go back and look at some of the testimonials of former athletes that I've worked with to help them through their transitions. Guys, don't hesitate to reach out. Visit TajDeshawn.com. That's where you can find all the free resources, not just the podcast and the books, but access to me. You can schedule a free call with me. I'm not going to get on that call and try to sell you on buying a group program. I have a ton of free access and scholarships for athletes to work with me. So utilize those resources, guys. And last but not least, I definitely want to encourage you guys to grab my first book, Thrive After Sports. You can just go on Amazon, type in Taj Deshawn. I have multiple books on there, but I always try to point people to Thrive After Sports just because I think that's the book that I look at as the most impactful that can help an athlete through the transition. I know a lot of people have read that book and been helped through the transition without ever having to speak to me or even listening to my podcast. And I just got this recording today that I wanted to share with you guys from my guy Benjamin Van Buren. He's a soccer player, former soccer player at Mercy College, went on to play professional soccer and just recently retired. And he read my book while he was playing, but then read it again after he retired. And this is what he had to say about it. I love you guys. I'll see you in the next episode. Peace. And here's Ben.
Yo, Taj, it's Ben from Athlete Mentor. Just want to let you know, obviously your book came in and I read it a while ago when I was still in season, and it didn't really hit me then. I was like, yeah, cool, it's a great book, whatever. And then I went to Spain and I was playing for a team over there, and then I left because my grandmother was sick, so I came home, and now it's hitting me. So I read it again. Dude, that thing is phenomenal. Like, if you could put this audio on a case study on your website, I would do it, because it's crazy how, like, the skills and attributes that student athletes have just go missing. And it's like, yeah, you're playing sports, you have all this adrenaline, all this hype about you, all you're working out all the time, you feel good, and then out of nowhere it's like, oh cool, I'm done, you know, like I have nothing to work for really. So then you get into sales, you get into other things, and you find something that you want to build for yourself, and that's what you get that excitement and that adrenaline from again. So yeah, man, I just want to let you know that I read it again and it really hit me now that I'm kind of officially retired as a player, but yeah, that's all I wanted to say, man. I hope you're doing well, hope you're living the life. I'm actually on Long Island now. I'm going to go to Stony Brook basketball game. So at your alma mater. But yeah, dude, phenomenal work. And let's obviously stay in touch. Maybe get on a call soon. Talk to you later. Peace.